Okay, dear Dharma friends, we are going to the next session of this next part of this mindfulness for young adult session, and that is short Dhamma sermon. Actually, these days we were discussing Dhaniya Sutta available in Sutta. This is also a very interesting Sutta. Actually, we discussed Rhinoceros Horn Sutta, that is the Khagavisana Sutta, for several months. And we have moved now to Dhaniya Sutta, and this is also in Sutta Nipata. The idea is actually Buddha had a very interesting conversation with one herdsman called Dhaniya. Now, as you know, during the Buddha's days, most of the Indian society is based on agriculture, and people are used to look after many cows, many ox, and using which they are able to gather either milk or curd and various other milk products. And basically that has become their measurement of the wealth. And whoever having many cows or many ox are considered as a kind of a wealthy person. And here also, Dhaniya is also very much like a healthy person in that agricultural society. Now, basically, Dhaniya had around 30,000 cows and 30,000 ox. And he's a married person with many children. And basically, their lifestyle is very much like wandering from one place to another place during the hot season. So that their cows, ox, are getting enough food, enough grass. But during the rainy season, they stop at a very comfortable place. They select a comfortable place. And then they are building maybe temporary kutis, temporary huts, so that everybody can live safely. Because the rainy season is really a stormy one, and they have to have enough safety for themselves, as well as to the other, their cows, so that everybody has to look after themselves. And at this occasion also, now the rain is about to come, and Dhaniya and the people have built proper places for themselves to stay. And similarly, their cows and ox are also in a safe place. Now he feels happy because everything is done well. He's a person working hard, and therefore their hard work has given enough confidence. Basically, now he is enjoying his good deed in a way. Now, as we discuss, in the household life, there are various kinds of happiness Buddha mentioned. One thing is called Atthisukha, where when one is able to gather a fair amount of wealth, and when he acquire a fair amount of field or whatever the wealthy assets, then one feel that one has something. This is also kind of a reason for one to become glad, and therefore Buddha mentioned this as Atthisukha, feeling that one has something. And on the other hand, there is another thing called Bhogasukha, where enough food is available for one to consume for a long time, so one can maintain oneself. Not only oneself, maybe one's children, wife, and maybe servants. The whole group has enough food so that one is comfortable. So this is Bhogasukha, where one feel comfortable, and there is no threat in scarcity of food. And likewise, when someone is living harmoniously, when one is basically living righteously, one can enjoy another type of sukha, happiness, that is called anavajja sukha, where one feel basically one's morality is good, virtues are well protected. So therefore, particularly when one is maintaining fair good morality, then one can have anavajja sukha as well, feeling that oneself is good, oneself is correct. There is no harm from oneself to another person. So feeling that makes you happy, and that is something Buddha mentioned as anavajja sukha. Anyway, this Dhaniya now feeling happy about his success, and now it is about to rain. So he is making kind of a invitation or kind of a challenge to the rainy god or sky god, we can say, to the rain, that I am comfortable, I am done. So if you like, you can rain. I have no problem in if you rain. So now the conversation is going on, and when Dhaniya is reciting these verses, Buddha heard them from far away, Jethavanarame, and he knew that Dhaniya is about to face a huge threat, kind of a life threat, because this rain, if continues, when continues, it causes flooding, and Dhaniya and the whole group would be subject to this flooding, and therefore ultimately they could die. So therefore Buddha was feeling that these people are, particularly Dhaniya and his wife, are fairly potential people, and they have the potential to become arahants. So therefore Buddha quickly intervened in the situation, and he come from far away through his psychic powers and stay on the sky and giving some interesting answers. So Dhaniya is explaining his situation and kind of admiring his situation, and Buddha on the other hand give a different perspective to his admiration. It's a kind of a comparison between the typical household life and the spiritual life. So when Dhaniya is mentioning I am living closer to the bank of Mahi, and when the, say, my kuti is well roofed and the fire is well kindled, and so I have no problem, so if you like, you can rain. Now Buddha answer in similar terms, but giving a completely different idea. Buddha mentioned that I am free from anger, free from barrenness, and again, simply I am living here just for one night, and my heart is open, my mind is open, there is nothing to hide, and all the fires are extinguished. Lust, the fire because of lust, fire because of hatred, fire because of delusion, all different kinds of internal fires are all extinguished. So therefore, if you like, you can rain. So Buddha is using the same terminology but giving an entirely different meaning, some broader meaning, spiritual meaning to these verses, and therefore the conversation is going on. Now we actually have come through this now for some time. So basically, I think we have to discuss today number 24. So in number 24, Dhani is mentioning like this. Atta vetana bato hamasmi putta chame samaniya aroga tesam na sunami kinchi papam atta che patteti pavasadeva. Now he is discussing here about his children and about his occupation. Basically, he is employed by himself, and he is working hard, and he is looking after this many cows and ox. So he is working hard, he is employed. So he is admiring that. He is not jobless, rather he is an employed person. So he admire that, he appreciate that, he value that. And then he now talks about his children. Puttachame samaniya aroga. And they are living close by, and they are maybe obedient, and they are healthy, and they are living close by. So there is nothing to worry about them, because they are living close by and they are fairly healthy. It is not just one child, but he, according to the commentary, he had 14 children, 7 daughters and 7 sons. So all are fairly healthy and living close by. So I have no issue about them, and I do not hear any evil about them. So there is no any complaints coming about his children. So he is fairly happy about his children. Now basically he is appreciating his household life, successful household life. Now when this is mentioned by Dhaniya, now Buddha is giving an answer. Naham bhatakosmi kasachi nibbitthena charami sabba loki atto bhatiya na vijjati atache pattesi pavasta deva. Now Dhaniya was mentioned about his employment. He is occupied, he is employed, so he appreciated that. But Buddha is mentioning he is not employed and he is not a slave of anyone. So employment actually has some kind of a say duty, and we are responsible for someone, and again we have to abide by certain rules and regulations. We have to respect the orders by the seniors. So likewise, there's a kind of a situation where sometimes we feel bad, we feel unhappy, we feel frustrated, we feel sort of belittled sometimes. So likewise, various issues are there in the employment. Now Buddha mentioned here he is not employed, and on the other hand, when Dhani is talking about his children and they are well tamed and they are healthy, here Buddha mentioned he is nibbittena charami sabbaloke, and he has no any kind of an attachment. He is with dispassion. I wander in all the world by what I have heard. So basically there is no children at that level. Buddha mentioned that he has no children. Basically he is by himself, and he can wander as he like. So he has a freedom. So when you have many children, you have to look after them. You have to sort of responsible for them. So many issues are there, but Buddha here mentioned he is basically feeling free, no children for him. And atto bhatiya na vijjati, so I have no need at all for wages. Now since he is not employed and he is not working for anyone, and he doesn't have any meaning of wages, looking for any kind of increments, maybe kind of salary, there is no such argument about it, because he is not employed at all. He simply depends on the other's generosity. Maybe he is going village pindapata, and people are ready to support. People are generous. People are giving it respectfully when Buddha is arriving. So likewise here, kind of a different scenario. So Buddha explains Buddha gives a completely different connotation to what Dhaniya is talking. Dhaniya is mentioning that he is well employed, he is happy about it, he is happy about his children, they are healthy, and he don't hear anything wrong about his children, there are no complaints coming about his children, so basically he is happy. And Buddha mentioned he is not employed, therefore there is no talk about wages, and he can wander anywhere freely because he has no children. So this is a completely different way Buddha give an answer. Now if we move to the other verse, Dhaniya mentioned atti vasa atti dhenupa godharaniyo paveniyopi atti usabhopi gavampati dha atti atache pattesi pavasa deva. Now these are some distinguished cows here. Now not just the normal cows, now he is giving a kind of a cross section of his herd, cow herd. Now there are cows and suckling cows, and there are cows with calf and breeding cows. And there is also a bull, chief of the cattle here. Now different groups are here. Now there are some seniors, there are some juniors, there are calf. So huge variation is there. It's a huge herd, 30,000 cows and 30,000 ox. So you can imagine, now he has all different varieties. Very strong ox are there, chief's cows are there. There are even cattles. So there are even breeding cows. So different cross sections are there. So basically that represents the kind of prosperity. If he only had the cows, then it also not fulfilled. because the others are not there. So basically he has a good collection of different categories here. So therefore he feel more prosperous. Now he is talking about in a way the bhoga sukha, that he has something and what he has is also really wealthy, and it has all the necessary components, parts. So therefore he feels successful and he is admiring that. And Buddha answer, natti vasa natti dhenupa bodharaniyo paveniyo pi natti usabho pi gavanpati dha natti atache patte si pavasadeva. Now Buddha give completely different answer, mentioning everything he doesn't have. Basically there are no cows, no suckling cows, and no cows with calf or breeding cows. There are not even a bull, chief of cattle here. Now he doesn't do any kind of herdsman job. He doesn't have any cows. So he is free. Now in a way this sometimes, when people have some inspiration about the spiritual life, so these kinds of answers, they strike. They actually feel. So when Buddha is telling, I have nothing, I don't have any cows. So that gives kind of a perspective to these inspired people. So that is what actually happening to Dhaniya and his wife. Because they are having the potential to become arahants, even though currently he is a herdsman and his wife is also there. But the potential is there. Now, whenever Buddha is talking about the renunciation, whenever Buddha is talking about the spiritual parts, so that strikes their heart, basically. Even though currently they are completely involved in this household life, there's a kind of a seed of enlightenment, seed of awakening in them. So Buddha is actually sort of allowing them to sprout, allowing them to come out, and Buddha is feeding them. Buddha is putting some fertilizer there. So allowing that hidden potential to come out. Now, actually sometimes when Buddha is giving this kind of answers, if such kind of a potential was not there with Dhaniya, probably he may feel sort of resentment, feel angry about the Buddha, because he is now talking about the success in his household life. Buddha is giving an entirely different answer, mentioning the value of renunciant life. So if there is no any kind of inclination towards this sort of a side, then these people even can argue with the Buddha. They even can sort of angry with the Buddha. But here, you can understand as we come towards the later verses, so they actually, after hearing Buddha's words, actually they were really inspired. Even though they are wealthy cowherds, they have this potential. The potential to get enlightened, potential to get awakened. So that is an interesting thing, where even though people are maybe spending kind of a luxurious life, a luxurious household life, there are still some people, they have kind of an inclination towards renunciation. Inclination towards sort of mindfulness, inclination towards mind investigation, to really understand what's really going on, rather than simply being a victim of all the sensual desires. Even though they are living a household life, they have this spiritual component, kind of a yearning for spirituality. They are seeking for an opportunity to develop spiritually. So this is a very interesting quality as human beings, most of us are having, because I can't say everybody is having, but some are having. So these virtuous people and these the most potential beings, they are born at different places, to different clans, different families, different countries. But when Dhamma is heard, actually they are seed of enlightenment, start to sprout, start to come out. Actually, I'd like to share with you a small recent example. Actually, recently, there was one Norwegian yogi. Actually, he is a young person, around 23 years, and he is in Norway. And since we have internet now, so he was browsing through various sites, and he get to know this Buddhist teachings. And he was not a born Buddhist, but through this Buddhist teachings, he was quite inspired. Now this person is going after various monasteries and all, and certain monasteries further inspire him. Certain are not, but certain monasteries certainly inspire them. And he is coming even to Sri Lanka, sort of in search of Dhamma. And he is quite inspired with the Buddha's teaching. And he actually met me, and he mentioned, so when he met Dhamma, basically the previous ambitions he had, different worldly ambitions he had, felt aside, and he was more inspired of following the Dhamma, practicing Dhamma. Now he is just a 23-year-old Norwegian, but the potential was there. So when somehow he come across Dhamma, so that the Dhamma seed has sprout. So it starts to grow. So that is now yearning for more success, success in the spiritual life, not in the mundane life, but rather his heart is now more inclined towards spiritual happiness, not any kind of material success, but kind of a spirituality. He is more geared, more oriented. So these kinds of hidden potentials are with the people, and that is why actually when after becoming enlightened, Buddha actually thought not to teach, because what his teaching is more subtle and it is going against the grain. So people are more likely to have kind of luxurious, sensual life. So his teaching may not suit them. So that's why Buddha become somewhat discouraged to immediately teach after he become enlightened. So you can even understand what's the situation of the Buddha there. Now he spent fair amount of time, went through a severe, a strenuous practice, then switched his practice to the middle path. As a result of that, he became enlightened. And after he became enlightened, he didn't feel like teaching, because what he realized is going against the grain, not very much tallying with the typical mundane, sensuous, gratification-based life. Therefore, he didn't feel encouraged to teach. But then it is mentioned that Brahma Sahampati, he approached the Buddha, and he mentioned a very interesting scenario. He mentioned that, please look at the world. There are people who are with little sand or little, what you call dust in their eyes. In other terms, what he has mentioned is, there are people with potential. There are people with enough potential, but if you don't teach, they also get ruined. They also get destroyed. They also will be carried away by the typical flood. Therefore, please teach. So this is the invitation that Brahma Sahampati has made in front of the Buddha. Then Buddha himself actually very much like surveillance the whole world, inspected the whole world, and he understood, yes, that is true. There are certain people who are with less dust in their eyes, less defilements in their mind. And certain others have some more defilements. Certain other has more defilements, and certain others are completely filled with defilements. So likewise, different categories of people are there. So when Buddha's teaching is heard by different categories of people, so if their wisdom is matured and if they are very attuned towards the Buddha's teaching, then they feel sort of enthusiastic. They feel encouraged. They feel inspired to practice Buddha's teaching. So that is why even if we consider what you call Saddhanusari. In the Saddhanusari group of people, so it is mentioned that they simply have heard the Buddha's teaching, especially about the impermanence. So all the faculties are impermanent, sense bases are impermanent, aggregates are impermanent. So have they have heard this teaching. If they themselves haven't practiced it yet, but they have heard Buddha's teaching about this vipassana. And Buddha mentioned, so now they start to believe it. I mean, they trust the Buddha, they trust the teaching. And as a result of that, they have kind of a confidence. Okay, everything is impermanent, everything is unsatisfactory, and everything is non-self. So they have that trust. So not yet they have fully realized, but they have very good confidence on Buddha's teaching. They are quite convinced. Now this is what we call as Saddhanusari. But they to become Sotapanna, stream winners, they have to practice by themselves. So Buddha shows the path, and Buddha mentioned now they apply mindfulness, they apply concentration to realize these truths. Not just believe, not just become faithful about them, but to realize them within themselves. So that is the most important thing. So likewise, we can understand. So whenever Buddha's teaching is heard by many different groups of people, even though they are maybe living kind of a luxurious household life, these the seeds of awakening, seeds of enlightenment are get ignited. So they feel inspired. They start to search. They start to look forward about the Buddha's teaching. They want to practice. They want to know more. Practice deeply about Buddha's teaching. So this is very interesting scenario that we can understand available in the world. And Dhaniya and his wife is also very much like that, represents that category, that potential, that they are really wealthy people and they are admiring their wealth, their success. But when Buddha is talking about the spirituality, certain entirely different subject, they feel inspired. Rather than getting upset about what Buddha is talking, they feel inspired. So this is quite interesting situation that we can come across throughout this Dhaniya Gopala Sutta. And with that note, I'd like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Now I'd like to open the session for questions.
Avasarai Bhante, we have four questions. But before we go to the questions, I would just like to make the announcement about next week. We will not be having the Mindfulness for Young Adults session. Instead, there will be the four-day meditation retreat that Bhante will conduct online via Zoom. So that will be from 15th. Let me just share the screen.
Yeah, you have to. I mean, I couldn't get out of this sharing. Shamila, please try to do it by yourself. Let me log out and come back again so that I think then it will be all right.
Screen. So this session is from the 15th and it will be 4 days. So 15th Friday, starting on the Good Friday, going all the way to 15, 16, 17, 18, ending with Easter Monday. So it will be done via Zoom. And this program has been created by Dhammasarana Temple in Melbourne. So the times are Melbourne times here. We will share this post and also the Zoom details in an email. We will send it maybe around Wednesday. And so this is the program. So it's a daily program and everybody can join in for the discussion Q&A and also the Dhamma sermon via Zoom. So the Zoom details will be shared with everyone by Wednesday, and also the email if you want to submit any questions to be taken out in the Q&A session. So this will be, the details will be sent to our normal email group that we send the reminder to. So if any on a Saturday, so if anyone is not getting that one, if you could please share your email in the chat window, then we can add you to that list and we will share all the details with you. So next Sunday 17th, we will not be having the Mindfulness for Young Adults session. We will have it the week after, which will be the 24th of April. So if, unless Bhante wants to add anything to the discussion.
No, actually, I have nothing to add here. Basically, they requested me to submit a sutta name that what we are going to discuss, but still I couldn't decide on that. I will try to send that information also so that you can include that also into the message.
Oh, okay, Bhante, we can do
that.
So just stop sharing this one. I will drop this into the chat window as well for anyone, but most preferred way is to send it to the email. So we'll move on to the questions. There are four questions at the moment. So first one is mindful sitting. Dear Bhante, during the sitting practice, I observe the in and out breath. I note multiple sensations of the in breath and out breath, such as the place of touch, rough and smooth nature, volume of air, hot and cold, etc. I can observe small units of breath inside one sensation, the beginning and the mid parts of it. After continuous observation of 5 to 10 minutes, these sensations start fading away. I keep observing and the breath, while it becomes very smooth and tiny and fades away, leaving me in an empty space. I keep observing the emptiness. From a distance, I can hear sounds, feel body posture, thoughts come and go. I feel calm and relaxed. After about 5 to 10 minutes, I feel uneasy and come out of this state automatically. How much I try to keep focusing on the empty space and stay inside this state, I get kicked out. My eyes gets opened automatically. The total duration is 30 to 35 minutes. I don't know the reason why I cannot stay longer and get uneasy after 10 to 15 minutes in this relaxed state. Tried multiple times and now getting frustrated. Appreciate Bhante's advice with metta. That's the end of the question.
No, actually, that frustration is the one you need to overcome. So basically, I mean, be more relaxed while you are in that empty state. Because if you are asking something, then that very asking, that very request, that very desire become a hindrance. So basically, you have to feel happy there. You have to feel satisfied there. You have to feel kind of contented there. So those are the ones further allowing you to stay there. Rather than whenever you are sort of maintaining any kind of expectation. So that actually sort of spoil the whole situation. Rather, you have to become desireless. So, say for example, that one way of reaching this state is the understanding through desireless samadhi. What we call as panihita vimokka. So, when we recognize whatever conditioned phenomena are unsatisfactory, they can't provide any lasting happiness, then no point of desiring things, no point of holding things, there's no point of grasping things. So with that understanding, mind starts to let go of things. So when mind starts to let go of things, so that basically is dependent on desireless. Now mind doesn't want to desire. Mind doesn't want to wish anything. So while being in that emptiness, so you also should not wish anything, rather just be. Feel fully contented. Feel fully happy. Just enjoying that. Doesn't matter, it may be 1 minute, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, fully enjoying that, fully being with it. So that actually will help to prolong it, to enhance it, rather than purposely trying to enhance it. Just try to be sort of quiet, feeling at ease and fully satisfied, not expecting anything, and just be there. So that is the approach that we have to take there. And not rigorously, strenuously trying to enhance, rather be more relaxed, more calm, more quiet, more sort of enjoyable kind of way that we have to go through.
Question number 2 of 5. This is a Dhamma Sermon question. Dear Venerable Sir, thank you for the excellent explanation of the sutta which is going on. I can see Daniya Gopala examples everywhere now. I have been working happily for the last 20 years, stable and low stress job. Most of my mortgage is paid already. My children are in the university, well placed to take care of themselves. My wife is working and independent as well. Both of us are following the Dhamma path together. When I hear the current economic crisis, I feel content and safe due to my situation and would not mind even if there is an economic crisis. When I hear about COVID, I feel content and safe since I am triple vaxxed and quite healthy. When I hear other disasters happening around the world, I feel glad that I live in a safe country. Is this Daniya Gopala mentality? Much merits again for your practical teachings. With metta. That's the end of the question.
Exactly. Yeah, very much like the same thing. So thing is, I mean, we are living in a very vulnerable very vulnerable society, very vulnerable world, and we never know what's going to happen. So therefore, we can't give full guarantee to any situation. Now, say for example, in 2004, we have never heard about tsunami in Sri Lanka, but all of a sudden, the whole the sea start to come inside to the inside of the country, and I even went closer to the sea seashore to see, is it true, because I was with one of my friends, and we both were very much like kind of challenging, thinking these people are lying, how such thing can happen. So we even went closer to the beach, and we checked actually whether such kind of thing is there. At that time there was no sign, but later, slowly, actually this water came in. So we didn't know even that. So likewise, actually, we can't actually assure very much how things are going to happen. So at the moment, yes, I am free, I feel safe, my economic situation is good, financial situation is good. My bank account has some money, so I feel safe. But can't say, we can't guarantee like that. So that is the sort of vulnerability we are living with. And that is the vulnerability everywhere in the whole conditioned world. So that is why this conditioned world is fairly a vulnerable situation, fairly a vulnerable world. You can't guarantee anything. It can't provide you lasting happiness, even though currently kind of a safe feeling is available. So we can't say so. Actually, now even when Daniya was talking that, so as you have correctly mentioned, so he may feel happy, he may feel contented, and he may feel safe. So that's why he is challenging the rain. If I don't mind, you can rain. So this is a kind of a mentality that he was having. But far away, Buddha, he saw that there's a danger, which Daniya couldn't understand. Buddha understood, okay, even though this person is now sort of happy about his situation, he didn't see the danger that he is with. That's why Buddha come across, that Buddha intervened to turn his attention to a different direction. So then he actually gave up this very life, and the whole group actually left the place. So they all were safe because of this intervention of the Buddha. So likewise, actually we are ignorant about the whole situation, and we don't know what are the sort of future situations. And so that is some unknown thing. But here again, it is not necessary to feel sort of frustrated or always feeling unhappy, depressed. That is also not the thing expected. Rather, understanding this world is like this. We are in the conditioned world. So these conditions are always unsatisfactory. These conditions are always changing. These conditions are beyond our control. So therefore, expecting sort of controllability, satisfaction, permanence through these conditions is very not a healthy kind of mentality. So we have to admit, okay, this is at the moment they are feeling all right, but there is still a risk. There is still a risk available, but I don't know. So that helps us to come down. That helps us to become well grounded and feeling sort of empathetic towards others, because I too come to the same situation. For example, I think Buddha mentioned, now whenever we see an animal, that he mentioned that at the moment I am not an animal, but it is an animal now, but how many lifetimes I were an animal? I was an animal. I don't know. But now I am not an animal, but how many lifetimes I have spent as an animal? So that kind of a sangvega Buddha asks us to develop, because that helps to look at the situation from a different perspective. Rather than simply look down an animal and sort of have a kind of superiority for ourselves. So Buddha asks us to look at them so that we feel sangvega, we feel urgency. So that is very interesting in the point of the spiritual point of view. So all opportunities, therefore, we can use to understand this vulnerability in the conditioned world. Yeah.
I'm sorry about that. Question number 3 of 6. This one is mindful walking. Dear Bhante, during mindful walking practice, many of us have come across an experience of automatic walking process. In my experience, after continuous attention on the soles of the foot and established mindfulness for about 15 to 20 minutes, this feels as a suspended state where walking happens without thinking and any of my involvement. During this time, I experience calm and relaxed state of mind. Appreciate if Bhante can explain what is the meaning and what we can derive about the Dhamma from this automatic walking experience. With metta, that's the end of the question.
What is the word he mentioned, Chatu?
Automatic walking process.
Yeah. So that is where now, say for example, when we do anapanasati, so the proper way of doing it is allowing the body to breathe as it likes. And then we are watching it in a way little kind of passively. We are not intervening the process, or we are not interrupting the process. We are not doing any forceful breathing. We are not trying to control it. Rather, we allow the body to breathe naturally. And so that we have a kind of a very relaxed observation, detached observation. The same thing happens in the walking. At the beginning, very much like we don't know that we are too involved in walking, and we are trying to walk slowly, we are trying to walk maybe mindfully. So likewise, we are doing something. But later, we recognize the art, we understand the art, and we allow the body to walk as it like, naturally. And we have shifted, or we have taken the back seat, and we can see it now. That is more feeling relaxed. This is what we call as the parato balma. Parato means looking at the whole experience as someone else's experience. Even though this is my body which is walking, but I can feel it as someone else's body. So that is what we are discussing there.
Question number 4 of 6. This one is a theory question. Dear Bhante, it might be too early in the Dhamma sermon to ask this question. If one has all three happiness, sukha, Bhante mentioned in the Dhamma talk, to what extent we should be acknowledging and rejoicing these happiness scenarios? Presume there is no insight in this sutta that these rejoicing are completely not appropriate and ignorant. As lay people, where should we draw the line? Much merits. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, so Buddha's teaching in one sense actually is not only for monks, but for lay people at large. Now, you know that there are many other suttas like Vyangapajja Sutta, where Buddha discuss about how one manage one's wealth and how one treats one's children, parents, servants, etc. So likewise, many instructions are there for one to lead a successful household life. So, but here actually a different situation. Now, when Daniya Gopala is very much like exclaiming about his household life, he's appreciating the wealth and all the other favorable situations he is having, Buddha sort of very much like challenging it, very much like inviting him to look at a different way, because Buddha now has seen the danger which Daniya Gopala hasn't seen. That we need to understand the context here. Because now Daniya is actually happy. What you are telling is true. There is no wrong in doing it. But Buddha seeing far more, Buddha see the danger that this person is about to face with. So therefore, in that context, now Buddha is trying to sort of awake him to a different side. Not just helping him to continue the household life, but rather putting a kind of a different idea to his mind, so that what he hasn't seen, now he is, Buddha is kind of trying to sort of show him. Therefore, in this context, what Buddha is doing is correct, and that is what has happened. But on the other hand, there are other situations where other household people come and ask how to live a household life, what would be the successful household life, how I have to manage my wealth, so etc. etc. They ask. So Buddha give some that kind of suitable answers on those occasions. He didn't immediately mention about the sort of renunciation or that sort of thing. Rather, he give a kind of an answer which is more suitable for household life.
Question number 5-6. This is mindful sitting. This is the first time I took part in this program. When I try to focus on breathing, my breathing becomes voluntary and makes me tired and anxious. Bhante, please advise. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, exactly. That is what I have mentioned to as the answer to the previous question when he is talking about walking. In breathing also, so at the beginning, we don't know the balance. We don't know the limit of effort. So we put unnecessary effort therefore. So we are trying to breathe hard. We are trying to breathe forcefully. We are trying to breathe artificially. So this all unnecessary interventions are there at the beginning. But this is how we are learning. I mean, through faults only we can actually learn. So this you have to go through. Can't help. Later you will understand, I mean, it is not necessary to do this kind of an intervention. Let the body breathe naturally. So you may understand that you have to take your hand away from the process. Let the process happen naturally. You don't need to intervene. Body know how to breathe. So that balance you yourself have to learn through faults actually. So, I mean, you yourself will understand, okay, this is the way to do it. I don't need to do any forceful breathing. Rather, let me do it carefully, allowing it to happen naturally. So, you will understand that. I mean, different techniques actually you can use. Say, for example, rather than immediately trying to look at the breath, probably you can do some sort of a body scanning. Say, starting from the head. And then go towards the toes. Again from toes you are coming to the head. So likewise you do some sort of a body scanning. So that helps to sort of balance your effort. Maybe to have a kind of well-grounded attention towards your body. And very much like now you are in a kind of equilibrium. And now softly look at the breath. So that may be helpful, because rather than immediately trying to look at the breath, probably would be difficult for a beginner. And on the other hand, probably if you are familiar with Buddha Anusati, maybe Metta, so you can practice any of those for some time, so that mind become calm, serene, and then slowly look at the breath. So likewise, if your mind is agitated and if your mind is asking too much, quick progress, that actually spoiled the whole situation, and it's difficult to practice Anapanasati when you have that kind of an attitude. That attitude can be changed when you do a kind of a different thing. Say you are reflecting about the Buddha's qualities, you are practicing loving kindness, or you do a little bit of body scanning. So that prepares yourself, and then slowly you can look at the breath. And on the other hand, you can do some walking meditation. There also you can sort of develop mindfulness, develop a kind of a balanced attitude. So that balance, mindfulness, that what you have grown there, developed there, you can slowly bring to the sitting session. Maybe you can sit at the walking path itself, or maybe a close by place, so that you don't feel kind of new to a completely new place. Now, very much like shifting your attention from the steps to the breath. And even if it doesn't successful, you can actually look at the rising and falling of the abdomen. So that is also another approach you can take. You can try various things. I mean, till you recognize the art, it's a little bit difficult, but don't get discouraged. You can continue the practice.
Question number 6. This is the last one. Regarding Dhamma Sermon. Dear Bhante, regarding the Dhamma seed, which makes us excited when we hear Dhamma, which you mentioned during the Dhamma Sermon, can this also lead one to wander along wrong, fake Dhamma paths as well? That's the end of the question.
Yeah, it can say so. I mean, we can't deny that actually when that kind of inspiration can lead towards wrong path as well. But if you are trying genuinely and enough faith is there and maybe good association is there, then the most probably you may come to the correct path. So basically we can't say that we are immediately recognizing the correct path. We may stray on different directions, different methods. We may wander in various directions. Later only actually we may understand, okay, this is the path, this is the way to move forward. Therefore it is very difficult to say that very first time that we come across the very best practice and the most suitable one for me and the very best teacher suit for me. So I mean, we don't know. It's a kind of a challenging situation. That's why I mean, we have to keep a kind of an open eye, open heart, open mind, to learn, to look at, to open ourselves to various teachings sometimes. And particularly when you are practicing mindfulness, so basically that mindfulness itself has a kind of a potential to drive us in the correct path. So that is why it is mentioned as the Ekayana Magga. It is a kind of a direct path. So if you are practicing mindfulness correctly, it's very unlikely that we go wrong, because mindfulness is very much like bringing us towards in the correct path. And there are many, many interesting books written fairly confirming Buddha's teaching, fairly in line with Buddha's teaching. Therefore, it is, unlikely that one may completely go onto a wrong direction. But as you have mentioned, these inspirations can motivate oneself to, at the beginning, to do something if one is not wise, probably to go into wrong direction as well.
That ends the questions for today, Bhante. Okay. So I think we're out of time as well, so we'll finish up. Firstly, I'd like to thank Bhante and pass on our merits for helping us out with these, with the valuable time and answers. And secondly, to the people seen and unseen helping to make this program happen. And lastly, to the participants, because without you, we could not continue. So with that, we'd like to end the program. Therawan Sarnai.
Yeah, Therawan Sarnai.